But can't you see? Welcome back, everybody. I am Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, from state to local news, entertainment, sports, and weather, Civic has you covered. We've got our daily news roundup podcast that gives you what you need to know in your community. Head over to your local Civic Media station's website, like WAUK.com in Waukesha and Milwaukee area, which is where I broadcast from, and get signed up for your daily news roundup podcast. It'll be delivered right to you. I've got a great guest, and I have her on in just one sec, but I wanted to give Mark from Prairie du Sac a brief moment to comment. Mark, if you can keep it quick, do we have a justice system or do we have a legal system that sometimes tries to get to justice?
Well, under our Constitution, it's interesting. I was just looking it up. Under the preamble, one of the first things they said after we created a more perfect union is establish justice. And one of our beefs in the Declaration of Independence is that we wanted to have justice in this country. And I don't know whether we do or not. I mean, I've heard, you know, they want to compare the protesters on January 6th to those the Black Lives Matter protests. They say, I've heard people, you know, throw out, well, they, you know, cost $11 billion in damage, and that's not true. I don't know. I mean, it is just, we have to do something a little different because it just seems like there's not impartial justice being doled out.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Mark. And speaking of that potentially impartial justice and impartial protection of our rights and freedoms under the law, I am very happy to bring on Kate Smith. She is the director of the LGBTQI plus policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Kate, it's really nice to meet you. Thank you for making time. We're here to talk about the Supreme Court oral arguments that occurred last Wednesday. This is in the Scrimeti case that deals with gender-affirming care for minors. A complete and total ban in the state of Tennessee eventually made its way up to the Supreme Court. I mentioned this on Thursday last week. One of the interesting things is that the question of the parental right to determine health care for children was not taken up by the Supreme Court, which, Kate, I just find fascinating in this greater sort of environment where we hear a lot of vitriol about parental rights to make sure that they can do what they think is best for kids. But the Supreme Court didn't go there here. Interesting. Set the stage for us more, Kate. What's at stake in this decision or this case that's now before the Supreme Court for decision, which will get before the end of the term, which occurs in July, term ends in July? What do you expect? How did you think the oral arguments went? I'm curious because I listened as well and I was concerned.
Yeah, I think that that's a really good way to put it. So what's at stake here is whether young people and their families are able to access best practice medical care. We currently have about 24 states that have some sort of ban or restriction on transgender medical care for young people on the books that have passed in their states, Tennessee being one of them. And as you pointed out, this case was really about equal protection and whether a ban on transgender medical care violates the Equal Protection Clause. And some other lawsuits that are challenging many of these other bans also talk about this issue of parents' rights and the ability of parents to be able to make decisions for their families and the right to direct their medical care as well. So it's a really high stakes case because we know that this type of care is really life-saving and that when young people need it and they're able to access it, it really drastically improves their mental health. It decreases suicidality. It decreases depression and anxiety and really increases positive outcomes for young people. So it's gonna be hugely important. And we'll have to see, like you said, in later next year, how the court rules. I really heard some great things. I heard some concerning things in the arguments. Obviously, there's so many folks who are trying to go through and figure out exactly how might the justices in the Supreme Court land. I think we heard some really sound acknowledgement that this care is really helpful and beneficial for at least some youth. I think there was disagreement among the justices about the benefit of the care and how much benefit this care has and whether there is harm in the potential provision of this care. I think the folks arguing on behalf of families made a really good case to show that it's important that doctors are able to have access and make those decisions about whether this care is useful for their patients, rather than judges or legislators. So we'll have to see how it goes from there.
One of the things, Kate, that I found really challenging about the framework for this appeal is that in large part, the outcome may be determined by what level of scrutiny the justices apply to this case. And again, folks, talked about this for over an hour, I think, last week. So you can check those shows out at civicmedia.us/shows/Maggie Dawn Show. But quick refresher, strict scrutiny, you're usually going to find a law overturned as being unconstitutional because government has to articulate a compelling government reason for the restriction that impedes upon usually protected classifications, not just the compelling government interest, but that the law is narrowly tailored to serve that. There's intermediate scrutiny, often what is used to review laws that per se discriminate on a gender basis. And then, of course, you have rational basis scrutiny, which is usually a green light and the law is going to be upheld. The thing that raised my eyebrows the most was the suggestion by Justice Thomas that this is not gender discrimination, that this is age discrimination. And that is going to set up, I think, what has to be an ideological battle of some sort on the court itself, because they have a prior decision written by Justice Gorsuch where he says any set of laws or employment, in that case, employment practices that treat people that are transgendered differently than cisgendered people is, of course, per se gender discrimination. And yet here you have Thomas saying, oh, no, it's not that. It's age discrimination. And the reason I find that so troubling and also absurdist in its conception is that all of the care that is at issue or the core elements of healthcare that are at issue there are completely legal for cisgendered children. Any parent can go get those things if their child is cisgendered, including breast augmentation, hormone therapy, or any number of things. But if your child is transgender, then it's illegal, which to me, again, if it's got feathers, it quacks and has webbed feet, it's a freaking duck. It's gender discrimination, which to me, again, leads to that intermediate scrutiny level, which would seem to at least require some rigor from the Supreme Court. Kate, what's your take on that? Because, again, even the suggestion by Thomas that, oh, we'll just call it something else is alarming to me.
Yeah, it's the discussion around level of scrutiny is really interesting. And I think it's important to note that the ACLU and Chief Strangio, who is the first out trans lawyer to argue before the Supreme Court, does maintain that this law is still unconstitutional, even under rational scrutiny. So there's some different, I think, schools of thought about whether this holds up in any level of scrutiny. However, as you're saying, right, a heightened level of scrutiny would mean this is even more unlikely to hold up under, for example, intermediate scrutiny. It's really wild to try to say that this is not gender discrimination. We know that puberty blockers and hormone replacement therapy, which just as an aside, young people are not accessing permanent or difficult to reverse types of gender affirming care when they're very young. Right? The first real medical intervention happens usually around when puberty, when you start seeing signs of puberty, and then maybe you start puberty blockers, which are fully reversible and can be stopped at any time.
And if we can, Kate, let's just re-emphasize that point, because I think this has been so sensationalized as a scare tactic. The idea that your kid could go to school and come back a different job. This is not what happens if you don't know what the course of best practice gender-affirming care is for minors. It does not include surgical intervention within the first interactions. It takes years, and there is lots of therapy and all, and I mean, both psychotherapy to make sure that the child, anyways, it is an extensive, long, and oftentimes difficult, grueling process for any physician to get to the place where they're going to say, yep, I'm going to prescribe puberty blockers or hormone therapy, all of those things. There are all of these incremental steps. It is a very, very, very long, 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 long process. Sorry for the digression, Kate, but extremely important that people understand that.
That gender affirming care needs to.
Hey, Kate, we're having a little bit of trouble hearing you. Cardi, are you hearing that as well? Why don't you...
Yeah, I'm trying to adjust the audio right now.
Exit and come back in, Kate. Let's try... Wait, let's try you now. Let's see how you're doing.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Yep. Oh, there you are. Back in full volume. No problem.
Okay.
But anyways, go ahead.
The idea, or there's this like misconception, right, that we're handing out surgeries to kids all over the place. And in reality, it's extremely rare. And the idea of gender affirming care for young people really is actually built to give families as much time as possible to determine the best course of treatment before considering more permanent changes. And to note, puberty is a permanent change. So when we require young people to go through a puberty that does not match their gender identity, that's also permanent, right? So ensuring that folks have access to puberty blockers allows them more time to make those types of decisions.
So critically important. Again, a lot of misinformation out there. So what are the potential outcomes from this case, Kate? And what does this mean for Wisconsin families?
Yeah, so there's one option where the Supreme Court says, yes, this law is absolutely unconstitutional. Maybe they apply that heightened level of scrutiny and effectively nullify this ban that could have ramifications for the around 24 states that also have bans on this care in place. They could return the case back down to a lower court with recommendation that the lower court assess it with that heightened level of scrutiny. Again, this case is unlikely to hold up to a heightened level of scrutiny. Or they could say that rational scrutiny is the most appropriate and say that they believe that this case or this law is constitutional under rational scrutiny. And in that case, then there are other lawsuits happening that maybe we'll see some other angles about discussing the unconstitutionality of banning this type of care. In Wisconsin, I know in 2023, Governor Evers vetoed a ban on trans medical care for young people. And so it's totally possible, right, in 2025 that we see the state legislature discuss this issue again, and we could see it move through the legislature again. So this case will have certainly really big ramifications there. And this case could have ramifications for everybody's access to care. If states are able to decide that some folks can have access to the same level of care and other folks cannot, then we're talking about things like birth control, reproductive care, and other forms of medical care that have had attempts to legislate in the past. So this really is about all of us and our access to best practice care.
Folks, that is Kate Smith. She is the director of LGBTQIA policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. I'm going to be back with more with her. We're going to discuss some of the insinuations from some of the members on the court that, well, Europe's pulling back and that makes this ban totally fine, and why that's actually very, very misleading. Keep it locked. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.